Well, Chester says, or writes, they are what I would say are aliens. I've heard people say they think they're government people, but to me, these are the fake MIBs. The ones I have encountered were about 5 feet, 5 inches tall, with only one exception. They wore all black clothes with hoods over their heads. They could appear and disappear right before your eyes. And they seemed very threatening to me, hostile. Their faces were very pale. Their bodies were small framed. When they moved, they were very smooth and silent. This is someone who has been seeing UFOs since 68 and has seen the MIBs usually alone. However, his first wife also saw them with him. So, what I want to know is, have any of these threats been acted on? Anybody actually harmed? And someone out there in Coastland wants to know, any women in black, or woman, as Dietrich would say, any woman in black? We shall see. As we continue with Nick Redfern on Coast to Coast AM, please stand by. Nick Redfern, you've been doing this for a long time, and we've been talking about the men in black showing up in threes. But a listener says he complimented you and said, I thought he said they come in threes, but I had two show up. They would not enter my home. That's number two. Their voices did not sound Brit, but did sound identical. I cannot remember what they said to me. Is any of this normal? Does it, well, it's not normal in any case, but does any of that sound consistent?
Yeah, I mean, you're right, Johnny. You know, it's certainly not normal to get a visit from the men in black, but it is consistent. I mean, you know, this sort of flat monotone voice where, you know, the witness talks about the voices being the same, even though it wasn't sort of like a flat British accent, but the fact that, you know, that they did all sound the same. That's something that's been reported often. Now, you know, I mentioned about how they're often seen in groups of three, and that was certainly the case in the 50s. But, you know, we do get reports of one and two, but, you know, for some weird reason, they do seem to often turn up in groups of three. But I think what this does demonstrate, you know, is that, again, you know, just more and more reports coming to the surface. And what I found is interesting is that sometimes people don't necessarily realize they've had a definitive visit from the MIB. They just recall something weird that happened, say, 30 years ago. You know, I saw a UFO and this weird guy turned up on the doorstep. And they just assume, you know, that maybe they told a friend and they told the local UFO researcher and he turned up. And it's only when they... years later then that they begin to understand, well, you know, this guy was actually not just some local UFO collector or whatever, but actually somebody who fits the bill of these weirder guys, then, you know, then they begin to realize that they had a visitation. So, you know, things like this, whether it's one person, two or three, they're all characteristics of the bigger mystery, if you like.
Well, now, yeah, another listener says 15 to 18 years ago had a visitation from cannot call, does not want to, but did have an experience some time ago after a very close UFO encounter. So maybe it's just something we don't need to deal with. Now, a while ago, I was saying, has anybody called the cops? Now, speaking of the cops, J. Edgar Hoover got into a little of this. He got the very first published book on the MIB. So how did he get mixed up in it?
Well, this is a really weird story, John. One of the things I often do when I'm investigating UFO cases, particularly when there's like a military or a government involvement, is to use the Freedom of Information Act to secure files. And that's how, you know, we've got a lot of documentation from official agencies using the Freedom of Information Act, demonstrating their interest in UFOs. Now, you know, people often say, well, the men in black are from the government, so we would see some evidence of this. One of the things I did was to file Freedom of Information requests for any files that might exist on Albert Bender and Gray Barker. And sure enough, I actually got sent some files from the FBI. And these documents actually show that back in the 1950s, none other than J. Edgar Hoover himself developed a deep interest in the Men in Black mystery, to the extent that these are officially declassified files, which are actually now on the FBI's website, which is called The Vault. You can find them there. And they talk about how Hoover had been told these stories about how there were these guys in black suits going around the country sort of threatening and terrorizing people involved in UFO research. Now, of course, back then, you know, the FBI kind of dressed men in black style, you know, black suits, hats, sunglasses, you know, the skinny tie, fedora hats, etc.
Oh, yeah.
So Hoover wanted to know, you know, is it somebody from the government? So he, what he did, he put his agents onto this story, and all the, basically the responses came up blank, but whoever these MIB are, they're nothing to do with the government. So Hoover began digging even deeper and got one of his agents to obtain a copy of Gray Barker's book. They knew too much about flying saucers. This is the one Barker wrote in 56, which chronicled the story of Albert Bender. And so in other words, none other than a source than the director of the FBI himself actually didn't just follow the Men in Black mystery, but actually owned a copy of the first book, which told the story of Albert Bender. So, you know, this is a very sort of weird situation. And we've also got files which have surfaced from NORAD, the North American Air Defense Command, from the 1960s, where they issued orders, basically, which went throughout the entire U.S. Air Force, essentially saying the same thing that, Hoover said, that there are people going around the U.S. terrorizing and silencing people about UFOs. We'd like to know who these people are. And if any of your local, you know, military personnel hear of any of these types of reports, let us know immediately because we want to catch one of these guys. So, you know, the biggest irony is that a lot of people assume the MIB come from the government. And then we get these documents years later where the government's saying, who on earth are the MIB? You know, it's like, well, if the government doesn't know, who does know? So this, for me, is a good pointer that although some MIB reports can be traced back to the government, overall, the vast majority, you know, they're as baffling to government agencies as they are to of us that you know, undertake the research.
Okay, well, I know your main thing is Men in Black, but, you know, just bouncing back, I just can't let this go. What was the deal with Mothman?
Yeah, well, the Mothman, you know, is a very, very strange story. And it kind of is an area or a subject that veers into my one of my other areas of interest, which is cryptozoology, the study of unknown animals or strange creatures. Mothman was this weird creature that was seen in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, in the mid to late 1960s. And it was described as like a large, like a winged humanoid, but with glowing red eyes, and which kind of gave it like a sort of almost like a gargoyle type imagery, if you like. And it was as if Point Pleasant had been sort of hit or visited by just a wide range of paranormal activity in this period. It wasn't just UFOs and Mothman that were being seen, but people, interestingly enough, as we talked about earlier, were reporting poltergeist activity, telephone interference, all just all sorts of strange supernatural things just hit the town. And Mothman, it was sort of the culmination of these experiences. But in the wake of all this activity, the Men in Black sort of strode into town, and, you know, they would turn up literally like 1 or 2 in the morning, knocking on people's doors and demanding to know if they were interested, asking the most bizarre questions, you know, not even just threats, but are you interested in UFOs? What would you do if somebody told you not to talk about UFOs?
Right.
Have you met John Keel? You know, just strange questions. And it unnerved a lot of people. And the incidents of the sightings of Mothman actually came to a halt in December 67 when the town's Silver Bridge, as it was called, collapsed into the Ohio River, killing and drowning dozens of people. And so a lot of researchers have taken the view that Mothman was some sort of omen, if you like, but not necessarily the cause of tragedy and death, but sort of omen that, you know, it was looming on the horizon. And when the MIB factor into the mystery as well, you know, that sort of makes it even stranger. And that was basically the premise and the story behind John Keel's book.
Yeah, there are a lot of original Americans up there, a lot of burial mounds and all sorts of stuff. I wonder if it's related to that.
Well, it could be. And as a little aside, you know, in the Men in Black movies, you know, Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones, they're known as J and K. Well, the reason they're called J and K, that's John Keel's initials. That was like paying homage to him, John Keel.
Right.
And
oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's where he came from.
Now, what about the strange MIB experience reported by a UFO author, Colin Bennett, in London in the early 80s?
Yeah, this is a very strange one, and it demonstrates, you know, that the phenomenon is a worldwide one rather than just something that occurs in the United States. Colin is somebody still active on the UFO scene today. He's written a number of very good books on the UFO subject. But he had this experience in the early 1980s when he was sort of delving into the UFO subject, and even, ironically, the Men in Black mystery as well. And got home one particular evening, and his girlfriend was sort of very disturbed. She'd got a knock on the front door by this guy in a black suit who claimed to have been visiting or tried to visit the guy who lived in the apartment above theirs, and asked if he could wait inside at Colin and his girlfriend's house, or apartment, I should say. And this is something we get a lot of, where the people get the knock on the front door, and it's like common sense goes out the window, or, you know, their sort of senses have been controlled by the MIB, where, you know, it can be midnight, and they just let these guys in. You know, you think about it, who would let three guys in black suits and sunglasses into your house at midnight? Nobody. But people do. You know, it's like they've been rendered into, again, some sort of controlled state. And so that's what Colin's girlfriend did. She let this MIB in. He sat down, and when Colin got home, started asking questions about UFOs and strange lights in the sky, as if he actually knew exactly what Colin was already into. And Colin found the whole thing sort of very, very surreal and strange, and eventually, you know, got very disturbed by it. And clearly it was made obvious to the MIB that, you know, he wasn't wanted. And he just sort of basically said, well, thank you very much, got up and left, which is, again, you know, a typical scenario. They can just, even in the middle of conversation, if they feel they've got all they need to know, or in part, they just get up and leave. And that's precisely what this MIB did, vanished into the night. And then that's when Colin thought to ask his girlfriend, well, why on earth did you let this man in? And she said, well, I don't know. He just asked if he could come in, and I let him in. So Colin raced to the door, expected to see him going down the stairs. And sure enough, like the US cases, he was nowhere to be seen on the stairwell, you know, in the apartment complex. And and it was just like another, you know, MIB case chalked up to, you know, just a very, very weird situation that just could not be explained.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, who would think that such a thing was even possible? So nobody said, cup of tea for the three weird fellas.
No, that never actually, well, I say it doesn't happen. There have been some cases where people, you know, have said, would you like something to eat or drink? And they, for the most part, always decline any sort of food or drink. There actually are a couple of very weird cases where somebody saw a man in black in a restaurant and said he tried to drink a bowl of Jell-O. It was as if he didn't know how to even use a knife and fork or a spoon or anything, and tried to...
Oh, no.
If you Google Men in Black plus Jell-O, you'll find the story. It's all over the internet. It's a famous one. But again, this is an example of how they act very strange. They, you know, they don't accept liquid or food. They don't sort of leave telltale, you know, evidence of their visitations. And, you know, it's just very, very odd.
Here's something obtuse. Email here says it's rumored that UFO Hunters show was canceled after reporting on events at Dulce, New Mexico. Wants to know if there was any coincidence with MIB to the cancellation of that show. I guess we'll never know, but we could take a shot at it.
I've honestly never heard of that at all. But, I mean, I can say that there are people who've got out of the UFO subject because of MIB encounters. I mean, we go back to Albert Bender. He was sort of scared rigid by the MIB encounter, and he walked away from it. And he was someone, he didn't have a TV show, but, you know, he had a very successful magazine that had a network all around the world. And the experience, you know, just instilled fear in him to where he closed his publication down. And that's something that has happened on a number of occasions. So
just moonwalked backwards right out of there.
Yeah, exactly. Just said, you know, enough is enough. I'm leaving it. So.
Well, any of these threats been acted on? I mean, has anybody actually been harmed that we know of?
Well, I mean, there are a few cases of suspicious deaths in the UFO subject, but nothing to where we can definitively say, you know, a person was sort of killed by the MIB. You know, they make these veiled threats, but what's interesting is that if people stand up to them, it's often a case that they that they don't know what to do. It really is like somebody's put like a virus into the program, and they, a number of witnesses have said the MIB kind of stammer and stutter and become, become confused when the person actually says, I want you to leave the house now, you know, and I'm not going to accept your threats. I want you to go. And they do. It's almost as if, you know, the threat and the menace just goes out the window immediately, and they, you know, like they've been rumbled or they've been, you know, just overwhelmed by the fact that there's, you know, the person has made a response, and they just quickly get up and leave. So that's odd in itself. You would imagine that if they're going to make these threats, they would follow through on them. But it's almost like a charade where they expect that the threat is going to work. And unfortunately, in most cases, it does, because the person feels that, you know, the threat is enough and that they don't want to risk taking it to the next step. And they say, well, okay, yeah, I won't say anything about it. And then the MIB leaves satisfied. You stand up to them, they leave confused. So
that's so funny. Three sinister characters come in there, but some Yorkshireman goes, I'm here trying to watch my DVD. Get out of my house. Now bleep off. Go on. Bleep off.
That's not a
bollocks.
Problem.
And don't come back this neighborhood no more. I mean, is that what it is? Just standing up. Let's assume they're evil. Is it that simple? Just stand up to it and go, get out of here.
Well, it is. Now, for the most part, that works. But there are some cases where standing up to them has led to even more sort of like a negative backlash. And people have talked about, you know, I mentioned sort of poltergeist activity in the whole. But there are some cases where people have stood up to the MIB, and they've just experienced in the aftermath, like days and weeks afterwards, of just total runs of bad luck. Like, you know, you work Monday morning over and over again. Everything from bad luck to ill health, physical and mental, to where the person has literally sort of come to conclude that it was tied in with the MIB experience, that something in the experience just, you know, said, okay, you think you can stand up to us, we'll show you what we can do. And, you know, this just everything goes wrong in the person's life.
Nick, this is extraordinary. I mean, I keep saying that over and over again. I knew about the movies. I watched the movies. I heard about the Men in Black. I kind of thought that's government guys, but I never really got into it. And then when I saw your book, I got into it, and I started looking around the net and got into it some more. And it's like, this is very, very strange, because it appears to be a completely real thing.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. When you mentioned the government thing, I wouldn't want people to think there, you know, there isn't an angle to it that falls into that category. There actually is. But what's interesting is that one of the things I point out in the book is that some cases we can trace back with like a 99.9% certainty to the government. But what's interesting is that it appears that these are sort of covert operatives within UFO projects in the government, but to cover their tracks when they go out to interview witnesses, they ironically may actually employ the MIB motif, if you like, to cover their tracks and pass.
Well, of course. I mean, I think we know the government's. Yeah, I got you. Well, they're tightly associated with the UFO phenomenon. I think we all know that. You ask anybody who's seen one, you say, really, did it look like ours or theirs? We'll be back with Nick Redfern, nickredfern.com. The real Men in Black on Coast to Coast AM. Fabulous interview tonight with Nick Redfern. I call him Nick Redfern as if he's original American, but it's Redfern. And he's speaking to us tonight about the real Men in Black, which they seem to be a real thing. And there's all kinds of stuff coming into the email box. You can email me anytime you want at johnb@coasttocoastam.com, J-O-H-N-B as in Bravo, @coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back with our final segment, so let's get this little break over quickly and return to Nick Redfern, the real Men in Black on Coast to Coast AM. I don't know about you, but I think the show needs to be extended to about double because there's still so much to talk about. Are there ever any women in black, or are they always men in black?
No, there actually are, John. I've got a whole chapter in the book on women in black stories. One of them was a case that I investigated about 7 years ago. I've been on a number of expeditions to Puerto Rico looking for the so-called Chupacabra. And when I went there in 2005, I interviewed a farmer who had had a number of animals killed and drained of blood under very unusual circumstances on the island of Puerto Rico in the previous year, which would have put this at 2004. And I mean, this was a guy who, you know, he had a small farm out in the wilds of Puerto Rico, not too far from the El Yunque rainforest, knew clearly nothing about the UFO subject at all, just wanted an answer as to, you know, what it was that had been attacking his animals. And when we got talking about the experience, he basically said that, you know, the day after he found the animals dead, something strange happened. I said, well, what was that? And he said he got a visitation in the morning from a man and a woman in black. And he said that, and again, he clearly, you know, as far as I was concerned, didn't have any knowledge, prior knowledge of the Men in Black mystery, but he described them to a T. He said that, you know, the man in black was sort of very emotionless. And what was weird, you know, this is Puerto Rico, the El Yunque rainforest, blistering hot temperatures, and they were both dressed in black suits. The man was dressed like a typical man in black, even with his collar done up and tie done up, you know, in like 95 degree heat or whatever. And the woman was dressed in like a black business suit, but they were both very, very pale, white-skinned, very monotone, unemotional, and began reeling off a bunch of questions relative to this, these attacks of the previous few days on his animals, and if he'd seen the whatever it had undertaken the attacks, and what did he think about it, and had he reported it, had he told the media. And when he said, well, you know, I don't know what it is and I haven't told anybody, they apparently were satisfied and just walked away down his drive of his farm and just walked off, you know, towards the rainforest, which was even more bizarre, you know, given how they were sort of dressed and looked, etc. But what was interesting in this case is something we've seen a lot of cases where the witness hadn't told anybody, but the MIB seemingly knew that something was going on or it occurred. That's the strange thing. It's not that the person always gets the visitation after, you know, their story's been highlighted in the newspaper and anyone could find out where they lived. Sometimes they haven't told anyone, and yet somehow the MIB know what's happened.
Oh, boy. You know what? There's so much to cover and so little time left in the program. Let's quickly get to Kenny, the first-time caller in Alabama. Kenny, thanks for holding on so long. If you're still there, come up on the bridge.
You're welcome. In 1973, I had a family member who passed away, and it was very difficult for me. We were close. And a few days after that happened, I was outside, frequently outside, where it was shortwave radio, and I observed a very, very bright star, and I thought, that hasn't been there before. So I began to wonder if it might be a nova. I was watching it that night, and then around 3 a.m. in the morning, it had been up there for a good hour, and it was appeared to be stable in one place, and it just flew away. I saw it when it just suddenly took off and flew away, and I thought, what the hell? Because it had been moving with this star field the whole time I was out in the sky. And I was so disturbed that I went in the house and called information and got the NORAD number and called the number that they gave me and talked to someone in the Air Force, and he said, well, I don't know what that could be. He said it shouldn't do that if it was geosynchronous. But he took the details, and I hung up, and the next couple of days, I began to get extreme paranoid flashes where I'd drive by a group of people who were harmless, teenagers, whatever, and I just felt threatened. So the last night, I was up late working on radio, and I heard something. So I walked across to the next street, and there was a building, and the building blocked the view of the street that I was on the corner of. And as I suddenly said, oh, my God, you're in the worst trouble you've ever been in. And I turned the corner, and at the opposite end of the block, a Chevy truck turned the corner, a blue truck, had a 1960s cab and a 1950s bed that had been put together. And the truck pulled up beside me, and I wouldn't look at it. I just walked the other direction. And they paced me, and then the truck stopped, and the guy said, come over here. I walked over, and there were three men in black. The driver, the other two were young. They were all in their late 20s, dressed in black, and the driver had a mustache. But they just looked funny. They looked kind of military, but they looked funny. And I walked to the truck, and he said, get in the truck. Now, there's three guys in the front. There's no back seat. And I said, do what? He said, get in the truck. And I told him, I said, man, that ain't happening. And he said, well, you can get in, or we can put you in. And I looked at him and I said, no, that plan's been changed. You can forget that. That's not happening. And I walked away from the driver's side and went around the back of the truck. There wasn't any tag. I took off running through this parking garage and cut back to my backyard, which was
yes, pretty good move.
So anyway, they went down the street that I lived on and pulled into a little strip shopping center that was closed at night, got out and took out rifles, and they're walking, searching the doorways, Vietnam style, like you saw in the videos from Vietnam in the movie on the news, looking for me. But I'm up the street, and I'm thinking, well, hell, first of all, they let me get away. They could have chased me down in the truck. Then they're down the bottom looking. So I went in the house and called the police. And the officers came out, and as the officers came up to my house, they saw them. They get in the truck, and they drive off, and they're driving away and turning the corner. They're still visible as they go up the hill. And I told the cops, there was two of them. I knew one of them. I said, there they go. That's them. And he said, what'd they do? And I told him. He said, all right, we'll go get them. Well, he goes down and turns on the wrong road and goes through an industrial warehouse area where there's a chain link fence, an area he checked every night. He turns around and comes back, that the police officers do, and he's looking at me and he says, we lost them. And I said, what the hell you mean you lost them? You could have called them. They were going slow when they left. And he goes, we didn't know the fence was there. And I said, you check it every night. How can you not know a fence is there? And he goes, sorry, we lost them. He
wow. said,
well, we have to go, and they drove off. Well, it just so happened, I had a friend who was a captain of the police department, and he talked to the officers, and they said, we got there, we saw the truck, but we just lost it. And he told me, if you ever see this truck ever again, I want you to come back. But I left one thing out in my haste to tell the story. The guy told me, I had told no one about what I saw. No one. The driver told me, he said, you need to quit seeing things in the sky.
Is that a fact? That's a good story, Kenny. Thanks a lot. You know, these stories all have a similarity, don't they, Nick?
Oh, they do. Yeah, you know, I mean, this is a classic point that he just made, you know, that Kenny just made about not telling anybody, you know. We get that a lot, you know, the three visitors, the fact that they're so elusive and they always manage to get away, even if it's, you know, like officials following them. I mean, Kenny's story is kind of similar. The police went after them, couldn't find them, in the same way that J. Edgar Hoover and the Air Force went after them and couldn't find them.
Nobody's ever gotten fingerprints or anything like that.
No, there's nothing like that at all. There are a couple of photographs which actually reproduce in the book. One taken in Jersey City in the mid-60s, which is a very interesting picture because it shows this sort of weird, enigmatic character standing in the doorway of a house, of a building, looking over an apartment complex where a UFO researcher named Jack Robertson used to live. And he was someone who his wife had MIB experiences, and he had as well. Sort of, they thought people had been in the house and going through their UFO files, and then they saw this character on the street, and a friend of theirs took a photograph of him, and I reproduced that in the book. So we've got a couple of pictures, but we don't have, you know, sort of hard evidence where we can actually say this person comes from here or there, and, you know, where they can be interrogated or anything like that.
Wow. Unbelievable. Parker in L.A. Are you there, Parker? Parker, west of the Rockies. He's gone? Okay. How about Ed? Sorry?
Hello?
Command. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, you're here.
Okay, I've got a story. But I don't think my guys normal. It was 1978, out in the middle of nowhere, and on a Wednesday, a friend and I had seen an extraordinary UFO, my first and only, really, UFO, but the thing was close, and we were flipped out about it. It was nighttime, and we saw this thing, and it was like 45 feet above us, and we saw it for quite a while, and it was there. It was metal, and it was big. And we told people about it, and they weren't too excited about it. Long story short, we kind of thought, well, we're just going to, you know, we'll just keep it to ourselves. At the entrance to this lake, there was a pavilion. We used to hang out there, and it was starting to get dark, and a dark car pulls up. And Tony was a car guy, and he says, hey, cool car. And then he starts to take off with his girlfriend. And there's these guys in it. They look, you know, like authority types because they got the dark and the tie and the white in the sunglasses, which was kind of weird. And but they pointed at us and did the come over here, the guy, the passenger guy. And we're, you know, by then we're like, oh, okay, you know, we're in trouble now because, you know, we had long hair. It was 1978. So we walked right over. They asked us a bunch of questions. And I remember these guys were weird. They were white. They were very white. And the driver didn't move. The guy didn't move. And I can't, I just know that Scott and I stood there and they asked us about the weird part was they knew we had, they accused us of seeing the disc. You fellas seen some stuff around here weird. And then they were asking us about the disc all of a sudden, or he was, the guy was, it was weird. It felt like later on at the time, I can't really tell you much more like the guy's tone or anything. It was just, they were really pasty, creepy. And there was, I know there was two of them. I don't know if there was a guy in the back or not. We were just, this guy motioned us over. And after that, they rolled off, and by then it was dark, and we're standing there, and we're thinking, how did they, we denied it. I remember we denied it because I was, we were scared to death. And the disc sighting hadn't scared us at all. We had driven around looking for the thing. It's out in the middle of nowhere, and, you know, we hopped in a car hoping to see it, but, you know, we never did. So we were talking about it, and Scott just sort of backed off a little bit. I was a year older, and he didn't, I remember he just ended up, I got really interested. I went out and started looking. Because I never thought, you know, UFOs, that was like, I had to find out about this.
But of course.
The weird part was the guys were intimidating, and I remember denying it, like, vehemently, but not, you know, like, yelling or anything. I felt like later on, I blew it off kind of like, well, how did they know? I mean, maybe they were trying to trick us, but they were so freaking weird. And you know, I didn't have anything in reference to it except that it was weird, and I
gotcha.
Kind of sort of forgotten about it. And that's pretty much it. I just thought it was unusual because later on, as I educated myself, 30 years worth now or so, I thought, you know, that story. And I remember the weird thing was that I'd forgotten about it. And then I saw Scott 10 years later because I moved around so much. My dad and even my pop wasn't interested. It was another story. But anyways. And Scott didn't really want to talk about that. He went, oh, yeah, that was, and I was like, man, don't you remember? I mean, that was the, I can tell you, and he just, you know, he'd kind of play along, but he didn't want to talk about it ultimately. You know?
Understood.
Like we went two different directions. You know what I mean? That's the
story
I got. But he had reminded me about those guys. I had forgotten about those guys. That's the one thing he reminded me. He remembered that.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Thanks for sharing that with us. Thanks very much. Wow. Well, I got a couple of quick ones for you as we rapidly run out of time here. Nick, have you ever been threatened by the MIB yourself or felt like they were watching you?
I've never sort of had that, you know, that late night knock on the front door or seen, you know, a black car driving slowly past the house. But what has happened a lot is what we've experienced a bit tonight, earlier on in the show.
Phone
interference. That has happened on a lot of occasions. And very, very weirdly, it's happened when I've been involved in MIB investigations and in some cases actually discussing telephone interference. It's almost like the phenomenon, you know, toys with you and plays with you and taunts you as well. You know, just to let you know that they're sort of watching or listening. And I think, you know, some people, they would find that unsettling. For me, it sort of spurs me on and pushes me further to look into the mystery rather than makes me, you know, want to back away from it. But, I mean, I've experienced that, but, you know, it hasn't sort of mutated, or at least not yet, to sort of, you know, the classic guys in black suits. But, you know, it's like anything in this field. The more you dig into it, you find that sometimes the MIB, they sort of amp up the, you know, the situation. So,
well, you know, I think it's only fitting that I should ask you, who do you really think they are?
Well, you know, I think there's several things going on. I think there are people in government who have sort of exploited this Men in Black mystery to cover their own tracks. You know, they actually act out sort of the MIB scenario, and then if anybody talks about it, you know, that allows for sort of plausible deniability, but by making the person look like a crank. So that acts as a good cover for
sort of real, you know, clandestine UFO projects that the government's running. But that doesn't take away the fact that the government, you know, realizes that there are these weirder men in black as well. And my view is that whatever they are, they're definitively alien in some sense. Now, whether it's alien in terms of extraterrestrial, interdimensional, paranormal, or whether these things are all sort of part of one bigger mystery. But I think these, when you have all these characters, you know, they're sort of 5 feet tall, pale, they have these bulging eyes, they're not aware of our mannerisms, they appear and vanish in the blink of an eye, you know, all these associated paranormal phenomena attached to them, I believe they are definitively alien, however we term what alien means, you know, and their modus operandi is based around preventing us from getting to the truth of the UFO mystery.
And I suppose it's entirely within the realm of the possible that they're doing it for our own good.
Well, they could be. I mean, if they are, they're certainly going in a weird way about it, you know, by scaring the living daylights out of people instead of just saying, hey, this is why we prefer you not to look into this because, you know, there are a few bad things. We understand you're a good person, but just don't do it. You know, it's not like that. It's like, really, if they're trying to do it for our own good, you know, why frighten people, you know?
What's next for you? Are you going on tour, or are you writing another book that you can...
Well, I've got this one out in about 5 weeks called The Pyramids and the Pentagon, which is a study of what the government has learned about ancient mysteries like Noah's Ark, the Ark of the Covenant, the Dead Sea Scrolls, and it's sort of like a real-life study of the Pentagon's own Indiana Jones-type characters. They literally had sort of secret investigations into ancient history and ancient archaeology. So that'll be out. And then I've got another book coming out later in the year, which is my other big areas of interest, cryptozoology, the study of strange creatures, which is, I kind of sort of split, you know, two a year, and one a UFO book, one a cryptozoology book.
Well, excellent. It's nickredfern.com, and you can see all of his books there, I presume. And we hope you will come back again soon, sir. It was a delight to have you on the program.
Well, thanks, John. I had a good time. Thank you.
Be well. Well, seems like an eternity between shows, but the week will go quick. We'll get back into the thing we usually do, which is the paranormal that we know of and the paranormal that we don't know of. Is that unknown unknowns thing? That's it, exactly. Have a restful and pleasant Memorial weekend. Remember what it's for, if you will. And until next Saturday night and beyond, be well and good night.